Yes.
I flew around, came around, and landed.
Uh-huh.
And it went up on its nose, and it bent the wing out on the end a little bit.
Yeah.
And I got a needle about that long from somebody. Maybe it was you. I don't know. And I heated it and bent it. See, made a 4-inch curved needle out of it.
Yeah.
And we got some thread, and we went out, and we sewed up the cloth on the airplane again, mm-hmm. and put a patch over it. And Tommy Richards, I think, brought another propeller up from Kotzebue, and put it on, and flew it back to Kotzebue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gee whiz, good memory you have.
I used to go in there sometimes with that big old Pilgrim of Alaska Airlines. Uh-huh. Big old high wing, big airplane, pilot sat way up in the front.
Yeah.
That's when he was young and handsome. She doesn't need to get nasty, does she?
Are you the photographer's helper now?
No, I'm just sitting here.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that was the good old days when Kotzebue and Kivalina and Point Hope, they were all nice little places, huh?
Yeah, really nice place down there.
Yeah, everybody had a dog team.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They'd go up to Cape Thompson and hunt caribou in the winter.
Seal.
Yeah.
Seal.
All reindeer eat up in Kotzebue. Everybody go fishing in the summer. Move the tents down on the beach in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of people lived inside huts yet. Yeah, you people had a wood house up there, but in 1948, why, most people in Point Hope were inside huts.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you had a wood house.
Yeah, we had a wood house.
What's your name?
Bob Jacobs.
That's it, yeah, Bob Jacobs, yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I used to have all the health nurse up there once in a while. I remember one day I took the health nurse into Point Hope, and she was pulling teeth. Some of the school kids.
Yeah.
One little girl cried, you know, and she was out in the schoolroom, and the nurse couldn't figure out what she was crying about. She says everybody else was getting a tooth pulled, but she wasn't, and she thought she was missing something, you know.
She'd been left out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now it's the Point Hope. It's a lot different. You won't see it that way. Yeah.
You got an airport up there too now, huh?
Yeah.
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 Where did they put the airport where?
Right at the end of the village, each side, up north.
Uh-huh.
Northward.
We do you know the mission rectors have moved down to village?
Yeah.
By the close right.
Oh, yeah.
North each side.
Mm-hmm. I remember one day I was in there and it was kind of overcast and snowing a little bit. It's in there with the mail. And there wasn't anybody out. Everybody was in their houses, you know, and smoke was coming up out of the little chimneys. It was still wintertime now. It was springtime.
Mm-hmm.
But there was some old lady up on top of one of the side huts, you know, looking out to the west there. And all of a sudden, she saw a whale spout out there. And she said something. She hollered, you know.
Uh-huh.
She must have hollered, there's a whale in Eskimo, you know.
And
in 2 minutes, people popped out of every one of those side huts up there, and I mean, they had their skin boats all set up down by the ice down there, and they took off with their dog teams and their whaling equipment, you know, and man, they picked up those sleds down there, or those boats, and away they went. I mean, that town was empty in just about 5 minutes. Everybody went out after that whale.
Yeah. When his eyes break closer from the village, we could tell. We can mm-hmm. tell that when they're catching whale.
Yeah.
They know them. When they gather together, all the canoes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to go around Cape Thompson there, you know, when it was foggy and the cormorants and the birds would come down off the cliffs right in front of the airplane, go into the water. We'd be out over the water always, you know, because it was too foggy to just go up over the cliffs.
Mm.
And sometimes I'd come up along that beach, you know, on the east side of the spit there, you know, coming around Cape Thompson and follow the beach, and it was so foggy I had to keep the wheels down below that high bank that was up there. And people would have their tents all along the edge of the beach, but up on the tundra, you know, and this big old wing on that Norseman, they would almost knock the tents down going along the beach there, you know. You'd see people come out of their tents and run. That's quite a place.
You still remember Point Hope.
Yeah.
Honey, why don't you sit down and have a cup of tea or coffee?
No, we're in the process of putting that bed together.
They got it all done.
Yeah, but I've still got to work on it.
Okay.
You mean they just
I'll be back in a few minutes.
They just unloaded it and left.
They put it up and said they had it in the back room all put up, so.
I don't know.
You know what just
what
floored me was when Independent Lumber delivered my new washing machine.
Yeah.
They did not check it out or nothing.
Oh, really?
And I kind of figured when you pay that much money for something, they ought to at least see that it runs.
Well, you know, we just bought a refrigerator from them downstairs, and I don't know if that works. I should go check it. We haven't plugged it in because we're shifting things around
down
there.
It just so happened that the washing machine did not work.
Well, I guess it's under warranty. You can send it back.
Well, it is, but I meant you don't expect them to come out and uncrate a little household appliance for you, but when you shell out $350 for a washing machine, you kind of like for them to come out and check it out and see that it's going to work.
That's true. That's true. Now, we have tea, we have cookies, you've got coffee, Charles doesn't drink, and I'll go get mine. You want, sugar, I forgot.
You have it in here, don't you?
Yeah. Right
no,
here.
I didn't have that cream.
That's that powdered cream.
Mm. I've been trying to look at your painting over there in the corner. No, the one laying long ways there.
Oh, yeah, this was done, this is Diamond. When I was, this is Fairway Rock.
Who painted that?
She did.
Oh, you did.
I really. Yeah, that's good. Good.
Kuyana.
Yeah, thank you. Kuyana is thank you. Yeah.
What's that? Oil paint?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oil paint.
That's like, Clara paints oil with oil. Mm-hmm.
But we do different kinds. I like the hunting, you know, we were out in the boat. We went, that day, I made sketches and I took photographs, you know, so this is a long time ago. This was 21 years ago, in 1953.
Oh, when you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just not getting around to drawing?
No, I've been painting 21 years. I've been painting the pictures, you know, from that trip, but we were drawing them.
Isn't this in the painting?
Yeah, I just did this.
Well, that's what I say. It took you 21 years to get around to painting.
Well, this is the first one I did like that. Yeah, that particular picture, but I've done others that were... Now, I haven't done Fairway Rock. You know, as a matter of fact, you're right, Virginia. That one painting took me 21 years to get around it. I've been thinking about how to do that for 21 years, because we sat in the boat, you know. We were getting ready to go. Our boat pulled out, and we looked back, and the other boat was still there, and we were waiting for them. Mm-hmm. And we just waited, and this guy was still looking, you know, and finally he came, and then the other boat joined us, and we went back out and hunted some more. We just stopped and had coffee and tea or something, ate a little bit, and then we went on out, and we went west. The ice pack opened out, and he had seen, well, that was Olaf Piskoya, actually, up on that rock. You know Olaf Piskoya? And he said that he saw out there floating a big walrus with the binoculars. Mm. So we went out to this walrus, and he was, he'd been dead a long time, and he was all swollen up. You know. But we cut the tusks out of it. But that was out to the open sea, way out in the ice pack was far back. So we got out there, and we got the ivory. And then, while we were out there, somebody saw some whale spouting. So we went out, it was one whale. We went after this one whale, and... We were shooting at it, but we didn't have any whaling equipment. We didn't have whale guns. We just had, I think, 30-06 and 3.48 and regular caliber. So we shot at this whale, and he sounded, and all of a sudden there was a school of whales all around us. And we said, we better get out of here because, the rest of the whales had come to his aid, and they would take him away, and we couldn't get him without big guns. So we left. We went back to the ice pack. Mm-hmm.
You got out while
But we chased him for a while. We chased him. Yeah, we got out while the getting was good. I was with Sam Mogg, Sam and Mary Mogg. And Sammy said that it was possible that they would come after us. You know, they could come up underneath the boat and flip it over with its tail if they were really mad at us.
Yeah.
So we didn't stay. But let me get in my chair over here. A little bit of sugar. Well, you've done. You have had a whale boat, haven't you?
He's the captain.
He's the captain of the whale boat.
When he was young, too.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the 2 years. 2 years ago. Three years ago, he retired for the hunting for whale and gave it to his son.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. We got only one son, you know.
No, I didn't know. Just one.
Just one. He's got big family.
Oh, that's nice. You have lots of grandchildren then.
Grandchildren. You know, first his wife, his accident, she died. So I raised those seven of them. But the youngest one, when she was 3 years old, lost the mother. They was hunting. And the second wife, he's got five kids right now. They're living around here.
Here in Fairbanks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Right over there, one of those apartments over here.
Is that so? Just opposite. Across the street?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice. And what is her name?
Theodore Francis.
Theodore.
Oh, Theodore. Oh, that's your son.
Mm-hmm.
Grandson. No,
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 son.
That is your son.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, what about, don't you have a son at Point Hope?
That's him.
That is him. But he's living here now.
Mm-hmm.
Will he go back to Point Hope?
He may. Sometime.
I see.
He's working right now.
I see. But he's your whaling son.
Mm-hmm.
He's got your boat. How big a boat have you got?
The same size of a whale as you.
No, we got smaller than the... Than those Diamond, that's where you were? Diamond Island, I think we're
Yeah,
smaller.
They were 30, 32 feet, some of those boats.
Ours is about 25 or 26, come on.
I see. Well, that's still really a pretty good sized boat.
Uh-huh.
Is that the average size at Point Hope?
Yeah. Well, they got a few of bigger boats, but they don't use them for the whaling. Too big, they say too big for it.
Is that so?
Each canoe has a five.
Well,
mm-hmm.
We had to go on the ice to the lead, you know. The lead always sometimes pretty far off.
Yes.
Last spring, the lead was about 6 or 8 miles out. And we had to pull the boat with the dogs in those old days. And now they pull them with snow machines and take no time.
I see.
With the sled.
Well, in other words, because you have to pull it over the ice,
uh-huh.
It's better to have a little smaller boat.
Smaller boat than a Diomede.
Yes. Yeah. Now, at Diomede, they use walrus skin, I think.
Yeah.
Yes,
the,
yes. We have two men, two big canoes like a Diomede boat.
We use Ugruk skin,
yeah.
That bearded seal,
mm-hmm.
For a canoe.
You know, I never heard anybody down at Nome call them canoe. Up at Barrow, you call them canoe. But
Umiak.
Yeah, Umiak. I always heard just Umiak. You know, and when they were talking about a canoe up at Barrow, a canoe is something different to me, you know.
Yeah.
Narrow at the point and covered over.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Just like a Nalongmish, you know.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah, yes.
Canoe.
That's right.
Yeah, that's our language.
Wow.
Canoe. First thing when we are school, you know.
I see, of course.
From our missionary, the first school we did, missionary.
That was the word that they gave for Umiak translation.
Canoe. Yeah. And later on, Umiak's, because
they're
Eskimo words. That's
Umiak is
Umiak.
Eskimo word.
Well, to me, an Umiak will always be an Umiak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's no other boat like it.
Bigger ones, big size like Diomede has.
Mm-hmm.
Umiak. They call it Umiak, big size.
Oh.
Umiak.
Mm-hmm. Now down there, you know they pronounce it Umiakpak. I believe that's what
that's a ship.
Is that a ship?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I
Umiak-puk.
See.
Umiakpak.
I see. It's very big. Very big boat.
Mm-hmm.
I see. David, when did you first start to go whaling?
1929.
You did? Now, was this in somebody else's boat?
His
my boat.
That was your own boat.
Mm-hmm.
My father's boat, but they gave it to me.
Well, now, did you whale with your father before that?
No, he don't have no crew.
Oh.
No, he's just a hunting.
Just had the skin boat and used it for other kind of hunting.
See, Charles, You were born at Point Hope.
Right.
Both of us. You're both born at Point Hope.
Mm-hmm.
When were you born?
1903.
You were? It was the year my father was born. My father was born that year.
Yeah?
He was born in July, 1903.
I'm born in September 30th. Yeah.
Oh, your birthday is coming
pretty
up
quick,
here.
Yeah.
Pretty quick, yeah. As he came home. And people were wailing then.
Oh, yeah.
They've always wailed at Point Hope.
Oh, always wailing. Every year wailing. Since I can remember. I can remember, they were wailing all the time.
Yes.
No doctor, no machine. His brother was same age like me. And he and I carried all the food, a big part of a that much height, like, dish pan, like a dish pan, a wooden one, mm-hmm. I made out from the tree.
A wooden bowl? Mm-hmm. Is it made from driftwood?
Mm-hmm. Driftwood. And then it's got handle on it. And Mrs. the captain's wife, she gets all the quacks, mucktucks, and quail mucktucks, and some groups frozen meat, cut the pieces, ready to eat, and put it on part of that one. So his brother and I used to carry that one, get some food from the ice whaling camp.
Yeah.
And then
I'm just going to get that out of the way.
And then we get it many times, rest it, and take it over to those whalers.
And that's, and you would take the meat out feed them on the ice?
We get some food from the house, you know, igloo.
Yes.
And they have a tent, you know, they use tent.
Oh, yes. Oh, what were the tents? They were skin, made of skin?
No, not that.
They still had that canvas there.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Gee, I'm going to pull this chair around so I can see you better. I can't get... That's my husband's chair for watching television. And he pushes it way back.
Here, now, what do you do?
Give it a push.
How far is
it? Oh, that's good. That's good, Charles. Thanks. Now, just swivel it a little bit there.
That's good.
Yeah, old timers is real. I like it very much myself too. And I was stay with my uncle. I was 9 years old that time, and he don't like to leave me at home because my uncle is the older one. My mother is younger than him. And how many men were you used to stay in a boat? 8 men or 7 men?
8 is the limit.
Limit, yeah.
Only the seats in a skin boat is 8.
We never get into the boat.
But they don't usually have 8, because sometimes 5, 6.
While they sleep.
Now, what do you mean 8 is the limit? I haven't heard that before.
That's 2 by 2 like this.
That is getting in a boat.
Getting in a boat, get ready. You don't have to rush when
you have
no
seat in a boat for 9. There may be a 9 men in a crew. But there's only 8 seats there, that's all.
I see. There's really 4 across.
Mm-hmm.
And a man on either side.
Yeah.
Well, then where does the... Oh, I see. There's no place for the 4 ninth men.
There's
no place for a ninth.
Now, is there any reason for that?
Well, no. That's the way they built the boats.
They just made with 4
mm-hmm.
seats.
Mm-hmm.
Could you take a ninth person if he just sat up in the bow or something?
Well, yes, you could.
You
but
could.
Mm-hmm.
But he never paddled
mm-hmm.
in sight.
Mm-hmm. We had 21 people in our Umiak coming back from Diomede. Boy, we rode low to the gunwales. Just heavy, you know. A lot of gear and all. We got a lot of meat.
Mm-hmm.
We were heavy with the meat and the... But we had a funny thing happen. There was a Nakmute came to Nome, white man. And he told Sammy that he had a job up at Tin City. And he said if Sammy would take him up there, then he would get to his job all right. He said he had a friend up there that was a cook that would hire him if he could get there. But he didn't really have any way to get there. So Sammy said, well, that was all right. He'd take him up there. This man said, if you'll take me in your umiak when you go, then I'll get off at Tin City and I can go up and my friend will put me to work. So Sammy felt sorry for him and he said, all right, he could go. Well, when we, the man worked real hard on the boat and he was a big man. So when we got to Tin City, he said, well, let me go on to Diomede with you. And he says, I'll work my way.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a good worker and Sammy said, okay, I'll be all right. So we went to Diomede, and that night we got to Diomede. You may have heard this story. We carried all our stuff up, and Father Cunningham was at there at that time. At the there was a Catholic church, and Father Cunningham was just leading. He had a wooden boat, and he was going to go back to the mainland. So he said there were two other women with me, and from Anchorage,
mm-hmm.
and he said we three women could come up and stay at the at his church. And there were two other, there were two men from Anchorage, and they were going to go stay at the school. Well, that was five of us who were, you know, from, I, they were four photographers, and I went with the Moggs because I was a friend of Mary's. And so anyway, we got settled that way. Well, then this third white man, we all went up to the church to eat, and when he got into the food, he ate everything he could find. He ate, and he ate, and he ate. And his name was Cecil Stone. We said, gee, Cecil, you eat like this is your last meal. And he looked kind of funny, you know, and he left. Well, that night, everybody went to bed except the kids were playing on the beach. And they saw this man come down, and he opened a suitcase. Nobody knew. He had this great big suitcase. Nobody knew what he had in it. He took a rubber raft out of his suitcase, and he blew it up, put it in the water. He went and took a paddle off of an umia. And he paddled out into the strait, and he sailed to Big Diomede. Well, this was 1953.
Yeah.
And I think what the Korean War was still on then.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids came up, and they got, I forget, but one of the council members, or, you know, one of the old-timers there at Diomede, and he came down and hollered at this man, and finally he went up and got Sammy, and Sammy came down, and they all hollered at this man. And he kept paddling and paddling, and pretty soon he was gone, and by the time Sammy got down there, the guy was clear over to Big Diomede, and they heard three shots fired. So they radioed. There was a National Guard station there, you know, with a radio, and they radioed Nome, and then people in Nome said, just a minute, or just wait there. We'll send somebody out to investigate it. Don't leave. So 2 days later, an airplane arrived from Anchorage, and it was the FBI and the all of the secret investigators from Washington, D.C., and Seattle, and New York, and Anchorage, and Fairbanks, they all came to Diomede Island. This man was a Russian spy, and they'd been trying to catch him. And the last time he'd been seen, he was hitchhiking down the Alaska Highway toward the States. And all the police were looking for him going down the highway. But instead, he doubled back, caught a ride to Nome, hitched this boat ride with Sammy, and he went off to Russia that way.
Hmm.
So on that tale, we'll go home. Give me a call before you go to Anchorage. I was glad to have met you people.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Come back.
We will.
Take care.
Bye.
Oh.
Okay. So she just lives a block away over here. She just comes by.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, that's how did I start to tell you about that? That was one of those strange things. Oh, so that's how we had so many people. So going back then, some of these FBI people, they stayed over. They flew in an airplane, you know, a float plane, a goose, an amphibian. But they, most of them left, but I think there were two men who stayed behind. Then one of them wound up going with us in the boat, and then quite a few people. There were some people just going to Nome for, one fellow had appendicitis, was going into the hospital, and some people just going in for the summer. Mm-hmm. That's how we had 21 people in the boat. We started out, I guess, about 15 or so. But it was my one time traveling by Umiak for a long time. 3 weeks we were gone. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah. You must be having lots of taping and stories on Eskimo.
Yeah, well, I've been taping just this summer, I've been doing this. Now, Paul Green at Kotzebue gave me that tape.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the little book, I Am Eskimo? Achnik, my name.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard about it, but I never read it.
He's age older than him, I guess.
Well, it was my mother who helped Paul to write that book. Mm. That was my. It says aided by Abby Abbott on the book, and that was my mother.
Oh.
So when I was up at Kotzebue 3-4 years ago, when I saw Paul, he said he had this tape, you know, of Eskimo songs. I should turn it off too. But I haven't made as many tapes. This is just something I've just begun.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mostly talked to people here in Fairbanks. That just people living here. And then I just went to Barrow. And I talked just to Pete Savolik.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Ernest Kignuk.
Mm-hmm.
And Otis Akivkuk.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him. But his daughter was translating, and it was a little bit difficult for me to ask questions, because I didn't know what he was saying to me, you know, and she didn't translate as too much.
Yeah.
But I would. He told me that whaling was quite a bit different at Barrow than it is at Point Hope.
Yeah, it is.
How is it different?
I don't know. I don't really know.
His wife said that was a ceremony afterward was different.
Oh, yeah, the ceremony is different, really quite different. A lot.
Even on the flippers, they're different.
Well, what do you do when you... do you have any ceremonies when you begin to hunt?
No.
In the early days, they used to have ceremonies before, though, didn't they?
In the early days, before the whites get there, what the story I've heard, that... a whaling captain has what we call a medicine man.
Angatkuk.
He had, that Angatkuk had to work with whaling captain to make him feel that he's going to catch a whale or something. But he pays him in food maybe in some little clothing and all that. And, private ceremonies are, they put private ceremonies when they are planning to get out of the whaling. One crew by itself. A whaling captain has a little ceremony, like feasting a little bit.
Yes.
When he planned to start and go out with his crew in the house.
That's at the house?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And, of course, a year before that, a person killed probably two whales, three whales. And you know those flippers, tail, that they save for feast. A person, a captain that hadn't gotten five whales, had to feast with that tail at fall time. Yep. When a slush ice appears first, they have to feast it to the people.
They have to get those fish.
And those people that had five or over had to give a feast in probably in March, later part of March. And first part of April.
The people that got more than five would give the spring feast.
Mm-hmm. Spring feast.
Now, they another keep thing, those.
When a captain kills two whales, and he's had gotten more than five or more than five. The first whale he caught from last year, he feasted that. In March, maybe later part of March or first part of April, and then he saved this last one. Even if he gets three or five, he feasts all those. Then the last one, he saved it to feast it at the time when he is planning to go to whaling the next day. You get it?
You know, before. The captains and our crews, their wives invite them and they give them food.
That's who comes.
Mm-hmm. And when a captain is planning to go out a whaling, start out tomorrow. He got those last one that he had gotten
last year's
in. And then in the morning, he just cut it, well, because he put it in Kalgi, where everybody. And in the morning, he just cut some of a piece so that he and his crew can take out for a whaling out of that tail. And they left. And then everybody goes in Kalgi and have themselves the rest of that.
I see.
That's a feasting, some sort of a feasting too.
I see. Now the women can go in the Kalgi too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the whole village might be
in the village, yeah.
When you are like this, you know, if you have not much food in at that time, and then you have stomach full enough for your family, and you have to thankful. I wish that man was kept some more whale. So I'm wishing for him. So we have two Kalgis there. One Wesikskap and one Kakmaktuk.
How do you call them again?
Kakmaktuk. Wesikskap.
I couldn't say that.
Wesikskap is, we belong to both of us.
Have you been to Point Hope?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
Next year, I hope.
I hope.
Oh, yeah. I want to go so bad.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I've heard so many things about it. And
you will have more taking
all
pictures.
All over. People tell me people at Point Hope are so nice. People who have been there from all over.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was in the food. You know, just like picnic, build the fire, fill up the stove camp. So you see them, those seal or whale or blubber, they put it inside of the stove and burn like old days.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, when do you do this? Beginning, how early?
Celebration. Whenever they catch a whale, it's festival, what do we call it?
Festival.
After the whaling.
Mm-hmm.
It generally starts from June 10th.
Oh, that
for
late?
Only, that for late. Only three days. Only three days.
Only 3 days celebration.
I'll put that on the calendar, and I'll come up next year for June for that. Mm-hmm. Now, I think at Barrow, when they bring the whale in, they just cut it up right away.
And I know that's...
have a blanket toss and
yeah.
A little festival a little bit that time.
Well, one by
in
one.
Point Hope, there's two Kalgis, as we told you.
Yes, now how do you say the one you belong to?
Umasiksikak.
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 Unga sik sikak.
Yeah.
That's it.
The first day of celebration, it just started. They bring the boats on the ground, you know, where
from
they
the beach, from
both
the
of them
ice.
At the same time. And then they feasted with mikiak, you know it?
Sour meat.
Yes.
Mikiak.
Yes.
They feasted there with coffee and donuts.
Yes.
And then that's the end. Everybody go there who wish to go. Take pictures and all that.
Tasted.
And that's the end. The next day, they...
put those umaks.
And then next day, they put those umaks again where they always celebrate. They have a special place there for celebrate all the time, from long years behind.
They put up the canoe like this
for
on one side.
For a windbreak?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Umasiksikak celebrates first, second day. They celebrate first. They bring those whale feathers, avarak, and some sour meat.
Some akutoks
when they have them. Then they start to cut those flippers in slides. Cut them and they divide the sour meat to everybody.
Oh,
everybody gets.
We got last year from Barrow,
Then captain, the crew doing, who catch the whale, a crew doing a cutting. And when the cutting gets piled up, while his captain start to captain and his wife start to call the people.
They're giving you no present.
Give them those flippers, muktuk.
I see.
And they distributed
really
that
beautiful
way.
Beautiful cuts you now, really.
They distributed that way.
Really
and
good.
When that thing is over, at Umasiksikak, that second day, they move to Karmaktuk.
Same day.
It's the second, same day.
Oh.
And do repeat it up there.
Repeat the same thing, those
now,
the last one.
How far away is it?
Oh, not too far
not
away.
Too
just
far. Just
north
opposite,
side.
North side of
Karmaktuk is on north side, and Umasiksikak is down toward the point.
I see.
Not
half
too far
mile
away.
Or something. No,
not mile. Too far
less
away.
Less than.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Away.
Oh, little, just about there from our place down there. Just
mm-hmm.
less, maybe. Less.
Mm-hmm. And then that second day, when a whaler,
first whale
newly whaler, that would kill a first whale.
They always
they put
blanket
a blanket toss
right away for him
On the second day.
Oh, now do you do that at your end?
Both ends.
At both ends.
If mm-hmm. one man, a newly crewed captain, you know, kill his first whale on one.
Yes.
They started, after giving away the flippers and all that, where they start blanket toss.
Well, now, is it, how many blanket toss? Just
and then,
two blanket tosses?
Yeah.
And then,
the next day.
I see.
That, it's the same way with our Kalki down the point. But if there's none, but they don't do that on the second day.
If there is none.
If they're not newly caught.
Oh.
You know newly caught, you mean there's he never reached those five whales?
No.
Just only
a
one
person, a captain who killed the first
yeah,
whale.
That's
first
right.
whale. First mm-hmm. one.
I see.
Up
another
to four.
After he killed the second one. When he killed the second one, he don't do that. He could with it, see.
Now, if, well, you would have blanket toss.
On the third day.
Okay.
But a newly caught person, first whale he caught, when he caught the first whale, well, the custom is that he had to put up a blanket toss on the second day.
On the second day,
yeah.
I see. That's the difference.
That's it.
Ooh.
And then on the third day, early in the morning, both colleagues start to cook same time, both of them.
Whale,
all part of the whale, heart, intestine, and kidneys of the whale, and tongue, every part, muktuk.
Yeah, are there different ways to cook different parts? So
boil them.
Boil
it all.
Just boil them, yeah.
Which you boil them all together at
no,
the same
part?
No, part of it. Some making some doughs right now. As a captain, when I was... They teach me, my aunt, and when we catch a whale, and here's a barrel, three barrels of sour meat.
Yes.
And then when they are started to giving before people, I have to give them, those are captains, all the captains' canoe, they have a whalers, that I have to give them. Ungasiksikak, his belongs to his partners, you know. I have to give them from the barrel. We have a gloves like this. So we have to muck the gun and meat. And so in old days, when it dripped the meat juice, you know, on the ground, that kalgi, it was happy, and they liked to see them when they dripped the meat.
That was a good thing.
Good thing. Good future.
Oh, yes.
That's new, make them, you know, happy, old folks even.
Yes.
And I have to give you, if you have a canoe belongs to Ungasiksikak and your husband, and here's your mikyak and muktuk in your plate.
I see.
That's, and later on,
and
after
finishing,
the same thing later on, the Kangmaktuk's captains and husband. After that, now you have to get harpers, woman. Serve around those meat.
What kind of woman?
I get the woman's, the captain, your, maybe your
the wife
cruise, your crew, my cruise
wives, you know.
Yes, yes.
Help us in
and
serving
they serve
them.
The need.
Mm. Oh, Lord.
I see. Do you, when you in the old days, when they boiled the meat in the big wooden bowl, the kettle that was made of wood, they put hot rocks in the kettle to make the meat boil? And would they take like the kidneys and the stomach and or the
hearts.
Hearts, all in the same kettle to boil
together?
No,
no. The muktik boil it first. It's hard to cook it, you know, after more than half an hour, I guess. Oh, about half an hour, 30 minutes, and boil it, take it off those. And then the meat in the tank is half-cooked part of it. Half-cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, real good taste. Salty, the tank, you know.
Is it salty?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Kind of salty. And the intestine are cooked with muktaks. Same cooked.
Oh, I see. When you cook the intestine, now at Diomede, Mary took two sticks and washed it in a bucket like this. Did you see this done?
No.
Like this. No. And then twisted it with the sticks some way. You don't do that.
No.
No, I've got a picture of the two sticks with the intestines where you swish them.
Oh.
You brought them, wash them. Now, I don't know, maybe that was they were still cased, you know. And it was to make...
They must be there.
To stuff in them. Now, when you fix the intestines to boil them, what do you do?
Just cut them.
You do cut them.
And put them in a pot.
You know, just like when you're cooking when you start to cook boil or something, or fried, you have to cut them, you know. Mm-hmm. We have always not much, just two of them stayed together, one by one, like this.
So the third day then?
Then they boiled and feasted until about afternoon. Then they start blanket toss.
Oh.
Blanket toss.
Now, is it
sometimes they dancing outside?
And both do the same day, I think. Take turns. Both places.
I see. You have blanket toss at both places.
There's another one blanket toss. There's some more people there. That's
both, at
like.
Mm-hmm. Both at the same time?
Not same time.
No?
They take turns.
They
turns.
Go there and then they go
and then they
people
go
back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
No?
No. Those people toward the point started the first. And then when they threw and gave a time for the other colleague to do
I
it.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Then everybody goes up there?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And then after that they have Eskimo dance in Barney Hall.
Oh! Where do you go for Eskimo dancing?
Barney Hall, what it calls Mission Hall there.
The Mission Hall.
Uh-huh.
Real big one.
Well, what's the other name for it? Barney Hall.
Barney Hall.
I see. Where does it get its name?
Well,
it's a missionary.
Mr. I think a man named by Hall outside had donated that.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh.
A man named by Brownie.
Yes.
Donated that hall.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that was very nice of him to do.
Mm-hmm.
What controls or what determines what Kajigi? I have to say it in my own way. Why do you belong to one, or why does somebody belong to the other one?
All I know about that is from my ancestors.
Ancestors.
My ancestors belongs to that Kali. And
see.
For generation, where you have to stay there.
Yes.
The same as mine.
I see. Does this affect who you can marry? Are you?
Well, the ladies, affected on ladies. And a man from Ungasiksigak may marry a lady from Kakamakto. That lady has to go with her husband.
I see. Uh-huh. Then after that, she will go to Ungasiksigak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if she is beginning, if she is born a member of Ungasiksigak,
she
belongs to her parents' curry, her father's curry.
Yes.
She then, until she married.
And then she has to go with her husband mm-hmm. to the other one. So mm-hmm. then she would change.
Mm-hmm.
She would change.
I see. So then their children would go to whoever their parents belong to.
Or whoever their father belongs to.
Whoever father. Their father yeah. belongs to.
The father belongs to.
Yes. This is kind of like a name. You know, the English mm-hmm. name goes down through the father. Some people, the name goes through the mother. But this is over in the Indians, the Tlingit people, you know, they belong to what are called clans. But it's like the same thing. It's a clan house, but it goes through the mother's side. All the children go to the mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
When a man marries, he still goes to his mother's side. But their children, his wife's children, go to hers. But anyway, it's a little different, you know, it's through the mother. This mm-hmm. is a, this Eskimo way is the same way as the old English way, mm-hmm. through the father's side.
Yeah.
I wonder if they do that in other villages.
I don't know.
That would be interesting to know. Point Hope is so old in some
customs.
It's
one customs. Of the oldest villages, I think.
That's yeah. it, yes. yes. And I think there are some customs in Point Hope that go back farther. Other villages have changed uh-huh. because people have come and gone, but Point Hope has stayed the same in some respects.
Yeah.
For a long time. People kind of met there, you know, when it just was solid like a rock. It didn't change. The old, old culture there that was dug up.
We,
you know,
we always find them old relics, you yes. know.
You work for university?
Yes, sort of.
Or teaching, eh?
No, I studied there for a long time. I went to school there for a long time. But now I do special things for them.
Oh.
Like I did a radio series for them, which was based on interviews, just about the history of Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working for them now, and this is a special project. But they have a rule that they're not supposed to hire somebody who, if you take 2 degrees from them, like I went there for what is called a bachelor's degree, and then I got another degree called a master's degree. Now, if I had taken that master's degree from some other school, they could hire me. But because I went here, they say that you should have more education from some other school. That it's not good if you go to the same school so long and then you teach there, you don't have enough experience from some other mm-hmm. place. I don't agree with them, but that's the principle. That's the policy. So I could teach at the community college, or I could go get another degree somewhere else, and then I could come teach here. But that's why I don't. One reason, and then I'm busy. Mm-hmm. My life is here, my home and my husband. So I don't really want to work full time. But I do little things. And I paint, you know. I'm pretty busy painting. So, but this is really interesting. I write a little bit. Now, this is not for writing. This is for the university library, so that people can come in and listen mm-hmm. in the future and say, that's as if they had met you, you know. Listen to your story or your life. We didn't talk about really, you know, what it was like. I would like to know what it was like as a boy growing up in Point Hope, and as a girl too. But did you go out hunting with your father, or you know, just what did you do day to day in this sort of thing as a boy? What did your father do?
Well, my father is a hunter,
mm-hmm.
and of course, in those days, well, they depend only on hunt and catch. And he's well. Since I knew the life from kid, you know.
Yes.
The mission was there already.
I see, the Episcopal mission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Episcopal mission was there all the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, Dr. Driggs, a man that goes there first mm-hmm. as a missionary, he's not a priest, but he's just a deacon and a doctor.
Oh, uh-huh. He was a medical doctor.
A medical mm-hmm. doctor. And they sent him there. Well, and he built a sod house for him, sodded on the side, in
1889.
1889. 1899.
Mm-hmm.
1889.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
landed there at Point Hope with that material to build the house, side house for himself for living, pretty good size, and hall for material. He's a deacon, not a priest and doctor. And he built it off from the village, about a mile off from the village. Why, I don't know, but I can guess. Probably, he's the first white man. He thinks that he's the first white man that should be lived there with the people and teach the people. He kind of a little bit scared probably, and he couldn't build his cabin house at the village. He decided to build his home a mile off from the village. That's the way I look at it.
That's, I think you're probably right.
And so he gradually talked to the people, and in the same time he tried to learn some words of Eskimo words, some Eskimo words.
Mm-hmm.
At Point Hope, he did. And then my father was a real young man when he get there and go to school. And then he started to school.
Men
and wives and...
Father go to school. My father go to school. And in the same time he hunt seals and all that. And then when he
met... What was this doctor's name?
Dr. Driggs.
Driggs, okay.
John B. Driggs.
Oh.
And then my father started to work with him, help him. After he learned a little bit about English, you know, English language, a little
ABCs,
bit.
They
could talk a little, could all understand each other. Then he started to work for him up there.
At the school?
Yeah, at the school and his home.
Home.
And it was home.
Mm-hmm.
Before the
Isn't
built
that
the
interesting?
Church.
Yeah. Oh. And I know when I guess in 1908, I guess that's about a time. Well, before that, 1907. Dr. Driggs they unloaded the material to build a church there, all the materials. And in 1907, I think it was, in that summer, they started to build a church down there.
Now, this would have been about 18 years later. Would have been quite a few years.
Yeah.
And his father...
And they have all helps from the village, men that were wanting to work there and help. To start it, you know, and they don't know too much about carpentry, but they're pretty good, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, at about the fall, when the hunting started, no workers much. And my father and the other fella, other man, are only two that keep on steady working in the church. And they work in the church, and then... they completed.
David, what was your father's name?
Oh, Vaksina.
Green Wagoneers done. Well, is it possible for anybody to run it over here?
Now, tell me again.
Oh, Vaksina.
His father.
My father's name.
Sina.
You see, they have no... no.
You're a good teacher. Real good.
No last name for Eskimos in those days. No last name, just one name.
Did that mean something?
That's
yeah.
From our father's, they start the last name.
It means, well, it's a, some sort of a whale. Whale.
It is.
Uh-huh. Arvik is whale.
Yes.
Yeah. That's,
How do you say whale?
Arvik.
Arvik is whale. And Sinya.
Sinya.
It means, what does that...
Sinya.
How does that...
Sinya. That means that sound to us, the one he catch more large whale.
I see. Never miss every spring. I see.
That's just his name.
Yes.
In his life, he caught only one whale.
He was not a great man. He was not a big man.
No. He's got only small boats, so just only time he wish.
He was a good church builder, though.
Mm-hmm. Church builder.
Yeah, I like to see that.
And then in 1908, priest came there after they completed the church. Mm-hmm. A priest's name is Reverend A.R. Hoare.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And we call him Mr. Hoare.
Uh-huh.
He's a priest, first priest there to come in 1908.
And that's after the church was built?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
When can you...
No. He's the first one. Huh? First he's the first priest. He's Englishman.
Oh,
he's
from
English.
Is that right? From England.
Uh-huh. And Dr. Drick has to leave, you know.
Oh, he did.
He's kind of old, too. Mm-hmm. And
well, he'd been there almost 20 years then at that time.
And he don't like to leave.
No, that was his home, I should think. Right?
Yes,
he went outside, then come back to our Point Hope area there. And he built a cabin up along somewhere in Cookbook River.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he stayed only about a year there, and then he moved up to Cape Lisbon and built a house up there.
He did?
He did.
His grave is up there. Yeah,
is that
and
so?
He died up there.
And he died there. Well, he came home.
Mm-hmm. I didn't, I couldn't remember seeing him when he was at Point Hope.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't, I don't try to think and realize, haven't I seen him in Point Hope? No, I can't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But after he moved up to Cape Lisbon, my father, the whole family with the skin boat, goes up there, wants to spend winter up there while he was living. And I saw him right there.
Mm.
I remembered of seeing him right there.
And you saw him there?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How big a village was there there?
Well, not too big.
Village. Not as big as Point Hope.
Small village. Only hunters there.
You know, camping for the
hunters. Hunters village.
For polar bears.
Huh?
Wonder why he moved.
Well, he wanted to be in Alaska and in the Point Hope area,
from the
I guess.
Eggs, you know.
And Point Hope area.
Mm-hmm.
In Point Hope, probably he would do a little mining, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he didn't want to be too near the priest because he might feel that he could it would interfere.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. After he moved in Cape Lisbon, well, when he's in Point Hope, he teach about religious too, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He puts up services and all that to everybody and teach the people about the Bible and Christ at the same time teach people.